There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, and here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday Eve as we got to go through another couple hours of live local talk. And I'm glad you're along. Phone number, text line 343-0106. 343-0106. If you got the app, you can text us from the app. You can call us with one push of a button there on the app. You can call us. You can also leave us one of those talk back messages. All right, as we get started on the show today, we're going to talk some Montgomery. We're talking about the state of Alabama, specifically in school choice bill, coming up around 12:35. Also, redistricting in the city of Mobile and homeless in Mobile. We'll have that conversation with LANDMAP's Dale Leash coming up at 1 o'clock. So that's all on the way, and a couple of stories we've got to get into. One I saw is a couple days old. But this is of interest, and I know for those that are super pundits out there, can't stand any kind of dissent out there, you'll just have to put your fingers in your ears. But it was an NBC News story. I understand where it comes from. But the headline here is McConnell, as in Mitch McConnell, wants a policy-free midterm campaign. Others in the GOP are less sure. Yeah, I'm one of those. I'd like to talk about that. That just this, well, we're not the Democrats. Now, that's going to work in midterms. The Democrats have done it to themselves. But for the Republican Party not to have a message to go on, you know, to say, well, they're bad, but here's how we're going to be better, I think it's a good thing. But we'll get to that later on the show. We'll talk about foreign affairs as we get started today. Of course, the big story overnight, ISIS leader killed. Now there's conflicting information about the children in the home coming and going now in this story. But from Fox News, it says Islamic State leader killed Thursday during a U.S. Special Operations Forces raid in Syria. They're working undercover to rebuild, they were working undercover to try to rebuild the terrorist group. This leader carried a gun wherever he went, once detained by American forces in Iraq nearly 15 years ago, reports say. This leader, Abu Ibrahim al-Shahimi al-Qaza, we'll just call him Abu, who assumed control of the militant group in October 2019 following another U.S. military raid that killed the former leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. You remember that, who was wearing a suicide vest that detonated during the overnight operation in Atme. It says, quote here, sources within, I guess, the Pentagon said several Iraqi intelligence officers say al-Baghdadi kept al-Qashiri away from the battlefield with the intention of protecting him so he would be the ISIS of the future, particularly because of his academic study of Islam, his two-decade history as part of the jihadist group, and his detailed firsthand knowledge of the organization's structure. So he was a high profile. So that's going on in northern Syria. Right, northern Syria. We've got that operation, the continuing war on terror going on with the bravest special forces going in there and doing that. At the same time, so that's going on. At the same time, we've got this discussion of Russia. We've got this discussion of the Ukraine. And I said something to Jeff here as we were winding up his show. What's the plan and what's the message? We'll pull back from tanks and troops for a second here and say, what is the message to Russia? If we go back and think about it, remember the early days of this, President Biden said, well, you know, if they just, you know, make a, and I'm paraphrasing, a little incursion, the Russians make a little incursion into Ukraine, then it's going to be different and we'll talk about that, work it out, this and that. Remember that? Okay. And then we said, well, we're going to sanction Russia, right? We talk about all the sanctioning of Russia, and that's still in discussion. But we're not going to use the military. We're going to sanction Russia. we've been talking about over the last 2 weeks here, moving the military, whether advisors that may or may not be in theater already, and regular troops that are moving closer to Ukraine. Now, if you think about these moves here that have been discussed in the last 24 hours, you've got troops, U.S. troops that are already in Germany, moving them closer into places like Romania, which Romania borders Ukraine, right? As does Belarus and Poland and obviously Russia, Moldova. We're moving troops to the other side, of Ukraine. But at the same time, we're saying that there's no military action will happen here. And now they're going back from saying the attack is imminent. Remember how many weeks did we hear that? The attack from Russia was imminent on Ukraine. And now we're saying, as of a presser yesterday with Jen Psaki, that the attack is not imminent. Here's some of Psaki yesterday at the press conference.
It's still not clear, though, that why. I mean, I know you've been addressing this here, but why now, then? Given that you're saying there's no new evidence that's come to light necessarily, it's not that you have a sense that Putin is going to invade any more so than you thought a few days ago.
That's true, but I just noted that it wasn't an event, because I think the way Zeke asked the question, in the last day or two or over the weekend or something like that. This has been under discussion for some time now, with our NATO partners, and of course within the administration. It is also true that there's no question that Russia and President Putin has continued to take escalatory, not de-escalatory steps. So it is not that it is one moment. We are looking at the events over the course of time.
Okay, so you get all that? Huh? What? And maybe within the depths of the Pentagon, and with our military brass, we know what we're going to do. Because I don't know that our president does. Not knowing what we're going to do is extremely dangerous. And at the onset of this, like I told you, I am not for putting our men and women in Ukraine. I don't see the value to our nation doing that. But not knowing what we're going to do and constantly changing our message on what we will or won't do or telegraphing that to Russia is very dangerous. Right now, I mean, there's stories. I got to pull the story. I saw something where, like, U.S. aircraft had intercepted Russian aircraft over the North Sea. Y'all, this is how this stuff starts. And if you hear from Jen Psaki that moving these troops, even though we say the attack's now, we're saying it's not imminent, but moving these troops, and it's a deterrent force, but we're not. How can you say we're not going to put military into play and then say we're putting troops, staging troops as a deterrent force? The whole time, you know, the Ukrainian economy is just getting wrecked. The people, can you imagine that for a second? And once again, I'm not for putting our troops in Ukraine, but can you imagine, like, if just right across the border there was Russia, and they were just sitting there going, we might be coming, we might be not coming. That would be, let alone the questions about the oil pipeline. I know this is a big part of the story with Ukraine. But you think people, watch what people did do during a hurricane, right? Imagine an army staged on your eastern border, a Russian army. People aren't probably doing the normal shopping, going to work, those kind of things. And you got Putin. And his desire is, as I've said the whole time, is to put the band back together. I mean, even I can see that here. Hayseed here on the Gulf Coast. Vladimir Putin desires to put the old band back together, reconstitute the old Soviet Union. But why is any of this worth it? Why do we need to go to war over Ukrainian sovereignty? Or even the oil pipelines, because everybody's like, you're missing the. I'm aware of the oil pipelines. Is that worth going to war against the Russians, y'all? Those even though the Soviet Union is gone, those nukes went somewhere, right? And they're with Russia. Now you say, there's no chance of a nuclear war. Well, we grew up in the 80s with the idea that you could have mutually assured destruction, and I think we still have that. So a story from yesterday as well. So Missouri Senator Josh Hawley is just talking about the idea of maybe taking Ukraine out of the mix for Article 5 protection. In other words, because here's what, if we were going to add Ukraine into NATO, it would have been done a while ago. Former President Trump would have done it. Well, he's no big fan of NATO. But we haven't. So this idea that Senator Hawley talked about is, you know, just take it off and say, here you go, Putin. We're not going to add Ukraine into NATO. Now go home. Well, the reaction yesterday to this from Jen Psaki was interesting as well, because that could only mean that the Russians were in control of Senator Hawley. Here's Jen Psaki.
Senator Hawley was out in the statement today saying that the president should sort of take NATO membership off the table for Ukraine, and that wasn't in U.S. interest to do that. Do you think that sort of rhetoric or sort of, you know, position by a U.S. senator right now is helpful in this showdown between the West and Russia?
Well, if you are just digesting Russian misinformation and parroting Russian talking points, you are not aligned with longstanding bipartisan American values.
First of all, Jen Psaki, if you're disagreeing with the White House, then you're parroting Russian misinformation. But I don't even know what that is. It's like some of the COVID standards, right? It is changing all the time. Like I went through in the beginning of this. I mean, we either were or we weren't, and then we were and we weren't, and we're going to, it's imminent and it's not imminent. We're going to sanction, but then we're moving military assets into theater. What is it? Story from the BBC, because it's been hard to get, you know, it's sad that I have to go to the English, especially with the surname Sullivan, to find the best reporting on what's shaping up there. But it is. It's been the best story out today. I think it's come from the BBC, and it says, Ukraine tensions, Russia condemns destructive U.S. troop increase in Europe. Moscow has said it was a destructive step, that's in quote, which heightened tension and reduced the scope for a political solution. So the move here, the saber rattle, even though, remember, this is the same administration said, we're not going to go to war, we're not going to... Now it's coming through the Russians. They said, but it was a destructive step in basically the negotiations on this. Pentagon said 2,000 U.S. troops would be sent from North Carolina to Poland and Germany, and further 1,000 in Germany would go to Romania, right there, on the border of Ukraine. Russia has, I don't know, you hear different estimates, 100,000 plus troops on the border of Ukraine. So I do understand that you're going to have the reaction from Russia saying, well, you've screwed up the whole negotiations. I get that. But what are we even negotiating? Even if they want to do it behind closed doors, that's fine. Do this behind closed doors, but then shut up. Don't give contrary messages every other press conference. This is a very serious situation. And people that are flipping about it that don't think it is, once again, this is Russia. Russia doesn't worry... Vladimir Putin is not worried about getting elected next time. He's putting the band back together. He doesn't have to worry about that. They'll have a mock election and he'll win again. We have politicos here that are dealing with something that's that important to figure out what their stance is going to look like going into the midterms. This is, and we have no consistent, I won't say coherent, well, inconsistent messaging on this. And I find that extremely worrisome. I think it's the most dangerous situation we could put ourselves in this. So grab your calls when we get back. 343-0106, 343-0106, plus school choice. You know, Del Marsh presented that ultimate school choice bill, as they called it, and that's the quote they put on it, ultimate school choice bill in the legislature. We talked about it some yesterday. Corey DeAngelis will join us. He's a pro in this. He'll talk about it as well. It's all straight ahead. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1225, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. we'll get to some of these texts, and let's go first. A text line just joining us. Hey, y'all. This is Midday Mobile. We got a text line. We got a phone line. We got a way to leave us messages. We can play back on there as well. Let's see here. I guess we got to go this way here. Okay. Well, Grant says, does anyone actually believe Jen Psaki anymore? Seriously. Yep. But we still have to. I mean, she is the spokesman for the president. So you have to, you know, you have to go through that. Fire Dog says they are worrying about the state of Moldova. Their state of Moldova bathroom. Are they cisgender? Does Moldova believe in 50 genders of any two? These are discussions currently going on in the depths of the Pentagon. You know, I would say that you're just being flippant, Fire Dog, but you see that when it was the presser, what was it, last week? And after talking about, you know, strategy and deployment, they stopped in for a second to talk about that stuff in a presser about Russia. I'm like, okay, how about you have a separate presser for that? How about we just talk about keeping ourselves out of war right now? My man Buck, the American industrial war machine, lobbyists and politicians can't make money during times of peace. That is a worry I have as well, my friend. And you are somebody who's seen it from the front, and I appreciate you greatly. So unnamed texter, see how they're playing this? Maybe that's discussion. The voice of text, I have to learn to translate this. Any decent, let's just say discussion domestically is Russian misinformation. Therefore, you can impugn your rivals domestically. Russia, Ukraine is tail wagging the dog for domestic gain by the Biden administration. Yeah, but they're doing a horrible, even if they were doing that, they did a horrible job of that. Okay, let's take your premise, and I can follow you if it's tail wagging dog. But it's the, well, I can't use that, it's the most pee poor tail wagging dog I've ever seen. The ever changing, you know, it's imminent attack. Now it's not imminent attack. Now it's going to be sanctions and no troops, but now we're moving troops. I mean, maybe it's, what was it? Y'all used to watch Kung Fu Theater. Any of y'all, you know, my age maybe, used to come on USA. Kung Fu movies were out, but I mean, like on USA TV, there were Kung Fu, and I'd watch them as a kid. And the drunken monkey style was my favorite. Remember that? It's like the old man who'd act like he was drunk and then he'd kung fu the crap out of the people. Maybe that's what they're doing. They're just acting like they're drunk and have no idea what they're doing. And then all of a sudden, bam, they're gonna get them. Let's see. The reason we need to go, unnamed texter. Give yourselves a nickname or handle on here. It makes it easier for me. I'd like to call you by something other than unnamed texter. So the reason we need to go to war over Ukrainian sovereignty, as you phrased it, is because U.S. promised to protect Ukraine if it would forego nuclear weapon development. Protection should be a NATO force which responds, not just a U.S. force, but including our forces. You know, I did say, unnamed texter, last week that we should say, listen, we are going to do some shifting in NATO to Putin. We are going to do some shifting in NATO, but we're not adding a member. We're dropping Germany and adding Ukraine because Germany's not Germany and France. It's like one side of this is like the Brits. It's the Brits in Poland, right? That are kind of they're engaging. I'm going to do something. Well, Germany and France, the biggest trouble starters of Europe over history, are kind of laying back on this one. So, and if you're referencing our promise to them, you're talking about the Ukraine Charter on Strategic Partnership thing. Did that get codified? Did that go? I got to check on that, unnamed texter. So maybe you can help me send me a link on that. IT Jesus. Let's see. I hope we've learned from World War II. Do not allow a megalomaniac chance to grab land because they won't stop grabbing. Give them a mile and they take a million. So through this whole process, IT Jesus, I've talked about the Chamberlain effect, right? And is this the Chamberlain effect? Some things I would agree with you are true on that, but I do not see the landscape the same way it was when the Nazis were moving pre-World War II and Chamberlain was twiddling his thumbs. All right, we're going to shift gears for a little bit here. Come back and talk about school choice, what it means in Alabama. Got a guest, Corey DeAngelis, joins us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1235 FM Talk 1065 Midday Mobile. Somebody, I tell you what, we'll get back. I got a ton of texts of our conversation from the first half of the hour. We'll get back to those later on in the show, so keep them coming. We'll pick that up in a news breaks on, you know, what's going on half a world away. We will get into it. Right now, back here at home, a story we talked about a good bit on yesterday's show, State Senator Del Marsh bringing what they quoted the ultimate school choice bill to the to Alabama, made it through committee in the Senate. Now, it's got to, you know, a couple other hurdles to climb over here, but it's got a lot of people talking and how this would work. And it's good to talk to Corey DeAngelis from American Federation for Children's, for Children. And first of all, Corey, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on. And kind of give us the what is school choice bill? Because these things get thrown around. Is there like, what's your elevator talk? If somebody said, what is a school choice bill? What does it do?
Yeah, totally. And look, thanks so much for having me. This bill, particularly Senator Marsh's bill, is something called an education savings account program, and it's the basic concept of the money following the child to wherever they get an education. So your child's state-funded education dollars, they could still go straight to the residentially assigned government-run school if you'd like, but if not, for whatever reason, you want to choose something else, that funding would follow that same child into an education savings account, which could then be used for any approved education expenditure. That could be private school tuition and fees. That could be private tutoring, any instructional materials like curriculum or textbooks. It could be even used for a micro school or some type of homeschooling arrangement as well. It's the purest form of funding students as opposed to systems, and it's the gold standard of school choice that we're seeing all across the nation. I'm pretty excited about it.
Okay, let's talk, because I want to come back here to Alabama and some other questions, but around the nation, I like the states being the laboratory, you know, that you can look elsewhere. So give me an example. Pick me a state that didn't have this or a system that didn't have this, then went into school choice and tell me how it worked.
Yeah, so Florida has greatly expanded their programs to fund students directly and allow parents to choose over the past couple of decades. A couple of decades ago, they actually were about the middle of the pack when it came to the nation's report card after adjusting for student demographic background characteristics. And fast forward to today, the most recent nation's report card has Florida ranked among the top five, depending on the outcome that you're looking at, after adjusting for background characteristics of the students. And we now have 11 rigorous academic studies from Florida, and 10 of those 11 studies find statistically significant positive effects of private school choice competition on the kids who remain in the public school. So it's a win-win situation where competition is a rising tide that lifts all boats, and this leads to benefits for the kids in the traditional schools at the same time, because the public schools start to up their game in response to competition. And look, last year in 2021, we're calling it the year of school choice. Parents have woken up more than they ever have before, and they're paying more attention to K-12 education than they ever have before. And they're pushing for the right to educate their kids as they see fit. And 19 states last year alone expanded or enacted programs to fund students as opposed to buildings. And we're just getting started. In 2022, there are now bills in at least 27 states now, including Alabama, proposing to fund students as opposed to systems in 2022. So the momentum is continuing going forward. I think it's because parents in particular over the past 2 years have woken up. They felt powerless in 2020, and they're going to fight to make sure they never feel powerless ever again when it comes to their kids' education going forward. And essentially the establishment has overplayed its hand and awakened a sleeping giant, which happens to be parents who want more of a say in their kids' education. The best way to do that is to truly empower them by funding students directly as opposed to the system.
Corey, how did this work in Florida? I want to go from the idealistic to the pragmatic in a second, right here, because we talk about the amount of money that the state does to fund children in Alabama. That could be in that account and be used to go to private school, homeschool, another public school, those kind of things, and transfer it over. But what happened in Florida for like maybe year one or year two? I'm just wondering, okay, you have a groundswell of parents that say, the heck with this, this school is not doing it for my child, I'm going to go over here. There are only so many desks and classrooms elsewhere too, right? I mean, is there a bottleneck in that? If you have a whole bunch of people who want to do this and go to those other programs, maybe there's nowhere for that child to go.
I mean, that's a good problem to have.
Sure,
I'd rather have the private schools full and then not having that option than not having the option on the table at all. So, but and typically when we see these programs get taken up, not everybody switches on, you know, immediately in the first year. And so there's room for adaptation and change and for the supply side to respond to the demand of parents. I mean, just think about New Hampshire just passed a program, for example, the Education Freedom Accounts, which is a similar proposal. They passed it last year. And about 1% of the school-age population opted to use that program in the first year. So it's not like a huge mass exodus from the traditional system. And, you know, the reality is a lot of parents are okay with their public school, and it's, you know, there's high transaction costs associated with switching schools. So if you're in a situation that's already working for your kids, there isn't a huge desire to switch to something else. And so we typically see these programs increase in the amount of people using it pretty slowly over time, which takes away from the argument from the establishment that this is going to, you know, completely dismantle the public education system, which was said in committee yesterday by Alabama Senator, a Democrat, Kirk Hatcher. He said that the bill would, quote, absolutely decapitate public education, end quote. And he went on to say that we know this, but we don't know that. We know the opposite is true. The public schools get better. We have 27 studies nationwide on the topic. 25 of the 27 studies find statistically significant positive effects of private school choice competition on the kids who remain in the public schools. Again, this is a win-win scenario. And what's interesting about this story here with Senator Hatcher is that he attended private schools growing up in Alabama, which is great. I'm glad he had that opportunity. I'm glad his family had the means to do so. But you shouldn't fight against school choice for less advantaged families going forward. And, you know, when you attended private school yourself, and your family sent you to a private school, that in a way defunded the public schools too, because the public schools are funded based on enrollment counts. But what's interesting about school choice programs, because only like half of the funding follows the child with these programs, the public schools get to keep all the local property tax funding. So on a per pupil basis, the public schools actually end up more well funded on a per pupil basis. Mathematically, if you only lose half of the funding and you get to keep half the funding for a student that's no longer there, you must end up with higher per pupil revenues and expenditures.
Now, and you're correct in that, although we've seen in studies here in Alabama, I'm sure they're mirrored elsewhere, but they're the direct correlation of spending to outcome has not been proven here. You know, that's not been, studies show you can spend, you keep spending, at a certain point, you're not getting anything back for it.
Yeah, and that's the problem when you have a traditional monopoly that doesn't have any particularly strong incentives to spend that money wisely. You shouldn't expect the outcomes to get any better. And we've seen that nationwide. We've seen that in Alabama. The funding goes up each and every decade after adjusting for inflation, but the results don't get any better. I'm reminded of a study by Ben Scafidi at Kennesaw State University. He found that between 1992 and 2014, per pupil education expenditures in the U.S. actually increased by 27% after adjusting for inflation. But teacher salaries, in real terms, dropped by 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pouring more money into the system, but it's not going to the classroom. It's going towards administrative bloat and staffing surges. And we're seeing that with budget plans in 2022 right now. They're just thinking about putting more people into the buildings, which is great for the teachers union because that means more dues-paying members. That's good for people like Randy Weingarten, who make over $560,000 per year. But it's not so good for the actual teachers in the classroom. And I do feel kind of bad for a lot of teachers in the public school system because they have to pay out of pocket for supplies each year. But the problem isn't with their competition. The problem is with their employer, which currently happens to be a geographic monopoly that doesn't have strong incentives to spend the money wisely on the most important educational resource in the school, which happens to be the teacher. And in fact, there are 5 studies on the topic, and I've outlined them at the Washington Examiner in a post called School Choice Benefits Teachers Too. And all 5 of these studies find statistically significant positive effects of private and charter school competition on the teacher salaries in the public schools. Teacher salaries get higher. Why? Because, well, their employers start to have stronger incentives to put the money into the classroom, and so the teachers even benefit from competition.
Well, I mean, the competition, in the statement that this would decapitate the public school system, it's almost making the argument for the side of school choice, because then you're admitting that something. Now, the problem is to say, you know, single that every public school is like every other. That's inaccurate. There's some that are, you know, do quite well, some that. But you're admitting then that there would be, if parents were given a choice, that they would choose the other over that school their child's in. If that's your worry that it's going to decapitate the school system, aren't you the opposition kind of admitting that it's better elsewhere?
Yeah, they're telling on themselves. They're admitting that they understand that many families aren't happy with what they're getting in the current system. Their main argument is, oh my goodness, this will defund the public schools, to which I usually respond, well, hold up a second. Why would giving families a choice defund public schools? And then they typically can't answer that question, because then they'll have to admit that they understand families would choose the alternative when given the option. But the reality is that the public schools actually financially benefit on a per pupil basis. They end up with more money per student. I mean, just imagine if you stopped shopping at Walmart, started shopping at Trader Joe's, for example, and Walmart got to keep half of your grocery bill each week. That wouldn't make any sense, but it would be a good deal for Walmart. Mm-hmm. And I would argue this is a good deal for the public schools, that they get to keep thousands of dollars for students even after they leave. And then look, the money doesn't belong to the schools in the first place. School choice doesn't defund public schools. If anything, public schools defund families, and school choice initiatives just return the money to the hands of the rightful owners, or at least the intended beneficiaries of the programs, the students and their families, and they can still take that money to the public schools. That option is still on the table. But imagine if someone tried to say that allowing families to choose their grocery store stole money from Walmart. I mean, that just wouldn't click. It wouldn't make sense for people, and it wouldn't make sense, because we all understand that even if you're using a program that's funded by the taxpayer, like food stamps, the money is meant for feeding the family. It's not meant to go straight to, it doesn't belong to Walmart or Safeway or Trader Joe's. It doesn't belong to any of the buildings. It belongs to the families. And similarly, K-12 education funding is meant for educating the child. It's not meant for propping up and protecting a particular institution, public or private. And we apply the same logic to higher education with Pell Grants for low-income students and the GI Bill for veterans. The money goes to the student, and then they can pick public or private, religious right. or non-religious universities. We do the same thing with pre-K programs. The money goes to the family, and they can choose public, private, religious, non-religious. The money follows the decision of the family. And all we're arguing here is that we apply that same logic to those in-between years of K-12 education.
Now, if just joining us, talking to Corey DeAngelis, American Federation for Children, I got this question yesterday, getting it again today, so maybe you could answer it. What do people, this person, there it goes. Brandon says, so do I get money for my three kids that already go to private school? If somebody already has children in private school, what would it look like for them?
You know, some of these programs have something called a switcher requirement, where you have to be in the public school system for a little bit and switch over. The reason that some of these bills have this provision is that it forces a financial benefit to the taxpayer. If you're taking on new students that weren't being covered by the public education budget before, that would create could create a financial challenge. But I think this bill, and I have to look more closely into it, but it might not have that requirement. You might still be able to use it in a private school, but you'll have to look into Senate Bill 140 mm-hmm. to get the specifics on that. From what I remember, it was a universal, accessible to all families program. After at least a couple of years, it would become more and more universally accessible to families. But again, you'll have to double check me on that one.
I'll do it, Corey. Another one here. This texter put something. I've had similar questions. I'll try to kind of combine them all, but this person said, I'm worried about the abuse if a parent's abuse the money, especially homeschooling. What will be, so maybe address that or address the outcome. Like, how do you know that the homeschooling did the job or the new school did the job?
This argument makes the perfect the enemy of the good. This would essentially be, would anyone argue that we should close all public schools because some public schools misuse the funding? that's essentially using the exception to prove the rule, and you shouldn't make policy based on extreme outliers. You should make it based on the general knowledge that, in general, families are more likely to make the decisions right for their kids' education than bureaucrats sitting in offices hundreds of miles away. Doesn't mean it's always going to be a perfect decision, but it's better than the status quo. And look, there are some accountability metrics in place for the funding. You have to use the money, for example, on education expenditures. You can't go buy a big screen TV, and that seems like a pretty reasonable regulation to have in place with this program. You can't go, you know, shopping at your favorite restaurant, for example. You have to use it on homeschool, either curriculum or a private tutor. It has to be used for an approved education expenditure. So there are those types of accountability mechanisms in place to make sure you're spending it on education.
Well, so when it comes out of the account, like, how is that the mechanism? We'll get about 2.5 minutes left, but how does that, do you get a, how do you pay out of that thing? I mean, are these people getting a lump sum of that money, or are they getting, they can write checks off that account? How is that done?
Yeah, it's either through a debit card mechanism, or it can be done through an online website that has pre-approved education providers. So that reduces the risk of fraud when it comes to these types of programs, that you can't use it unless it's a pre-approved provider of educational services. So I think that helps. That would help get rid of those concerns.
All right, Corey, I appreciate your time. Tell folks if they want to talk about this more. I think it's interesting for people in Alabama, like you said, what happened in Florida, to kind of study that. So you're with American Federation for Children, but how do they find you online?
You can follow me on Twitter. It's just at DeAngelis Corey. But if you want to help us in the fight for education freedom, you can take the Education Freedom Pledge. You can go to educationfreedompledge.com.
There we go. Corey, I appreciate your time. And keep us, I'll follow you on Twitter now. So keep me in the loop on any changes on this.
All right, absolutely. I'll be watching closely. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, there you are. Good deal. Thank you. That's Corey DeAngelis, American Federation for Children. And we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:55, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. I was just talking to my friend Leanna. Remember, Moon by Minute that you hear here on the station, heard about 20 minutes ago. You'll hear it throughout the day. And also, if you didn't get it during the day or you want to have it to listen again or share, check out the Facebook feed, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. Oh, I got a Facebook story coming up in a second. You can go there, and each evening they'll post up as well. Moon by Minute, the story of Mardi Gras, right here at FM Talk 106.5. If I could get now, probably the Facebook story next hour, because we got my man Dale Leash coming up in just a second. All right, somebody text here about the situation with U.S. and Ukraine. And also my man Joshua said Five Deadly Venoms, the best movie that ever made it to Kung Fu Theater. And I probably have seen it, Josh. I don't remember the number here. I don't remember the title, but I have to go back. Oh, Kung Fu Theater on a Saturday was something. But let's go to the prodigal son, or the prodigal gene here, because that's what's more interesting. The people disagree. So Gene said, Sean, Macron is meeting with Putin. Is that not good enough for you? Is that good? Girl, you got me. Gene, you got me. So what is Macron trying to do here? There's a whole bunch of discussion out that Macron's trying to do an end around and make France chummy with Moscow. You know, he's trying to rebuild this. He did something back in 2019 like this. He's trying to, like, I know we do NATO, but we're also got this back channel. We're buddies here. And don't worry about the NATO thing. There's a lot of people that worry that Macron's meeting with Putin now is not as a representative of France, obviously, as El Presidente, right? Le Président. He's not there. He's there to make a France-Russia accord more than he is as a member of NATO. I mean, that's... So, yes, is Macron meeting with Putin? He is. But what are they talking about? I mean, just saying that... is he there to... I mean, we're not... I don't want to put our men and women in harm's way So the to help the French solidify some deal like Germany seems to have with the Russians. So, Gene, if just because Macron meets with Putin, that doesn't tell me anything. On the education side, somebody said defund systemic compulsory public education. Spelled it the wrong way. That's funny. Here's the thing. So, in idealism, I agree with you. And through my 20s and my 30s and started falling away in my 40s, and the pragmatism moves in. That's not going to happen. All right, this idea that government should be in the business of school, compulsory education should be a thing. You can talk about that and say what a great idea it is, but it's never going to go beyond that. So what can you do within the constraints of the system we have now to make it more efficient and better for students and their parents? I think that's part of what we should look at. All right, Dale Leash, Lanyap, LanyapMobile.com. He's coming in next.